Hello and welcome to Replay, the monthly community podcast for the gamer scene, where we revisit the titles from two or more years ago. Today is Wednesday, the 27th of January 2010, and our featured game this month is quite timely because it's Mass Effect.
Boom, boom, boom,
boom. I'm Zan Tyriad, better known as Zan. It's my pleasure to introduce the review crew for this month. Leg doesn't like that word, but tough.
I've got fucking stupid idiots riding around these stupid modded cars and being tabs.
The crew, okay then.
Yeah.
The review pod then for this month. First off, we have from the gamer scene, the master of ceremonies himself, we have Ditz.
Hello, everybody.
Next on my list, we've got a big pod this month. We have a regular on the show, it's Trident.
Hi, everyone.
Another regular is Major Lag, or Richie.
Hey, no.
From the Ninja Fat Pigeons, and also the organiser of the Zombie Nights, it's Leg of Time.
Hello.
And making his debut on the podcast, we have Austin Ball.
Hello.
Right, without further ado, got a change to the format in this season of the Replay Show. Rather than talking about what we've currently been playing or what was we were playing last, we're actually going to talk about games from our childhoods or from yesteryear, and we're starting off with the sort of games that we were playing in the year 2000. So I'm just going to quickly run through all the guests and ask them what was their favourite game or their game in memory from that year. So let's start off with yourself, Ditz.
Right, I've got a list here, but as I say, because Leg's here, I've had to, one of them's actually just jumped out at me and I have to talk about it, and it's Resident Evil Code Veronica. For me this is like the last of the greatest of the ideas of Resident Evil. It's not this 3D environment, it's not Resident Evil 4 and 5 where you've got the 3D world and the camera's following you around. It's still the fixed position, it still had that sense of terror. You know, you played through as Claire and Chris and the story switched halfway round. It had things which, you know, Resi 4 and 5 just didn't do. Like, you could dual wield and you could aim at two different zombies at once. You could pick up items even though your pack was full. Like, you could pick up a healing herb and still use it, which is just brilliant. And, like, the opening cutscene just resonates with me now still, watching Claire running past and, like, a helicopter trying to shoot her down is, like, one of the greatest openings to a game ever. I got my Dreamcast that year, so I was happily playing like Sonic Adventure and Soul Calibur. And when this came out, it was like, right, this is the next gen. You know, I loved the Resident Evil series, and I thought it still is my favourite one.
Fair enough. Anyone else have any sort of abiding memories of Code Veronica?
I absolutely loved Code Veronica. It was great. I'm completely with Ditz. It's possibly even for my mind better than 4 and 5. It really just was the apex of everything they'd done up to that point. I'm fully behind that.
Cool. Okay, who should we go to next? Stride, do you want to give us yours?
Well, I'm also going to do The Sims, just to annoy Ditz, but I'll wait till The Sims 2 comes up later in the years we look at. But one I chose was Star Trek Voyager Elite Force on the PC where I was playing it. It was a first-person shooter by Raven Software, the guys that did Hexen and then went on to do Star Wars games, X-Men games, and Marvel Ultimate Alliance. I think they recently had a hand in Wolfenstein. It was run using the ID engine for Quake 3 engine, and you played as a Hazard team member, a special force set up to tackle dangerous and difficult situations, which was sort of done, I think, to allow the game to do things that maybe they don't normally do in Star Trek, like lots and lots of shooting and battles and things like that. Had all the Star Trek weaponry, phasers, phaser rifles, and even a few alien tech that they picked up to fill the gap of stuff that's not normally in Star Trek. It was just a really good game. It was a good single player experience, a bit short. Had the 32 player online that you'd expect which is more of just like a reskin Quake 3. Some interesting game modes like assimilation, where you go around assimilating people and then they turn into Borg and help you assimilate everyone else. But it was a good game. Had most of the cast from Voyager, apart from Seven of Nine, and it just felt like a big Voyager episode, and I really enjoyed it.
Excellent. Okay, Leg, do you want to give us your one next?
Yeah, I have to unmute myself. Right, I don't remember what games I was playing in 2000, which helps a lot, but I've got an honourable mention for one that I have played later, which is Shogun Total War, which is the beginning of the very excellent Total War series by the Creative Assembly. So this one I didn't play because it's about feudal Japan, which I'm not that interested in, but I played it fairly recently when I got the Total War Eras pack, which has all the games up to Medieval 1, I think. The graphics are obviously very bad now, but it's very nice and tactical, and you can just send your armies into battle, and it's a nice mixture of real-time strategy sort of on the battlefield and turn-based strategy in sort of a world view, just like all the Total War games.
Didn't that tie into a TV series or something? I seem to remember. Time Commanders? Is that?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, they use the Rome Total War engine to play out the battles in that.
I remember the Total War series. I just remember the amount of units you could have at screen at once, like with Shogun and with Rome. You'd put it up to like, try and put the slider up to like ridiculous. You'd have like 1,000 infantrymen on screen at once and just watch your machine break. But it was brilliant just to watch the battles try and like go out.
Yeah, my computer definitely didn't like that. it's like that with the newest one, but luckily my PC can now take it. So
excellent, thank you, Leg. Major Leg, do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. Let's see. Well, I found it a little bit difficult at first thinking about it, because 2000 was a tricky year for me. If you'd said 98, that would be easy. That's like, you know, GoldenEye all the way. 99 was Tekken 3. Played tons of those at uni. And then 2000 was the year when I finished uni and then moved up to London away from all my friends and so on. So I was a little bit stuck, I was thinking at first, but I did eventually come up with something. And I have to admit, I'm quite embarrassed that I completely forgot until Dit started talking about Code Veronica that I did get a Dreamcast in 2000. So there were a few bits and pieces I played on that, but my game of 2000, still one of my games of all time, I would say, has got to be Deus Ex. If it wasn't the first, it was certainly the first I played game which kind of married up the first person shooter and role playing game element. So it's something I think that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's sort of taken a while to experience a bit of a resurgence nowadays, where you've got Borderlands has come out and the Mass Effect games. It's not first person, that's third person, but the marrying up of the shooter and the role playing game, and that just really was an eye-opener, the way that you had the twisting story. There was so many different routes you could take through it based on your actions. I didn't realise until I read in an article years later that actually it was possible to save your brother when the agents come and what should we call it, come and come knocking at his apartment door and so on, you know, I just went, I hid in a closet and ran away out the window, because every time I tried to fight them I just got massacred. But then, yeah, like I say, years later I found out reading it was actually possible to save him, and obviously that sort of changed other bits of the game. And yeah, it's a shame the second one didn't live up to it, and you know, I am hopeful but not too excited about the third one. Everything's been very quiet about that since it was announced, so we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I remember the Deus Ex series like quite fondly. I don't know if it's I'm remembering it. It was just really complex, wasn't it? The things you could do, the different routes, you know, you could start, everyone could play, and the story would play out very differently. There was multiple endings and all sorts, wasn't there? And there was different things you could do or completely miss. And at that time, I think it was Deus Ex, and we had System Shock. And I think we've kind of gone a bit backwards in complexity. So we've had, like, you know, the Riddick series, Darkness to some point. Yeah, and obviously Deus Ex 2, which was more for the console. They still had the RPG idea, didn't they? But they muted it down a bit, and I'd love to just see that level of complexity again in a game like that.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Be nice if you had the option, I think. If you could go, you know, if you want to go deep, you can go deep. And if you don't want to, then, you know, the system does it for you. I thought Fable was quite good at doing that. You know, if you wanted to go complex, you could, but otherwise you could just let it do itself.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we're going to be talking about it more in a bit, obviously, but Mass Effect, you know, you could just press the Y button and auto-level up. So it sort of glossed over some of those complexities.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Major. And next is Austin Moore.
Hi. Yeah, it was quite hard for me to think what I was playing back those days, because I was at uni as well in 2000. I wasn't actually at uni at the time. I decided to take a year out, so I was quite drunk for most of it, if I'm honest. Looking back at remembering what I was playing, I was playing tons and tons of GoldenEye, still, and Mario Kart, still doing sort of staples of FIFA and ISS. And I was trying to remember what I was playing loads of. I remember being really impressed by Tony Hawk's. I can't remember if it was the first one or the second one, but that was just, it was something so fresh and new at the time, with all the tricks and stuff. Really loved it. But the game that I really did play so much was WWE SmackDown versus Raw, or just WWE SmackDown on the PlayStation. I was obsessed by it, to be honest with you. Had a real fetish for creating characters and then going off and winning the title belts. And I remember my favourite character was, I made one called Grandad's Grandad. And and he was like, I basically made him look as old as you could, you know, grey hair, glasses, you know, everything but a walking stick, walking around in like a leotard. And but he was absolutely granite. And, you know, you'd be like, you know, body slamming people, power slamming people all over the place. So I put a lot of time into that game. So my game of that year has to be that WWE game.
Okay. Thanks very much. Anyone here a wrestling fan? I didn't understand a word that Austin Ball was talking about.
I am a wrestling fan, but I am not a fan of wrestling games. I've never found one that has really done it justice to my point of view.
Yeah, I mean, with wrestling games, I mean, I played them right the way back since the old ones on the old Commodore 64 and the ones in the arcade, but the new ones, I'm struggling with them, to be honest with you. I actually prefer the old style. I don't know if anyone actually plays any of the current ones at all.
Yeah, they kind of changed them, didn't they? It's all right stick for grapples and stuff, and a hold down right trigger and do this, and it's an extra power move. It's not the same as just pressing A to grab.
Yeah. It used to be very, very sort of context sensitive. You know, you just press a button and it'd do what was the right thing in that position. Now, with that right stick, I really struggle with it myself. I can't get into it.
I think part of the problem is that the wrestling games, I mean, as they are games. They are effectively beat 'em ups. You know, it's you're having a fight against someone, but wrestling itself isn't two guys having a fight. It's two guys almost kind of dancing. You know, they are putting on a performance and so on. And I've not found a wrestling game that really lets you kind of put on a show type thing, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I mean, what I would do if I was trying to put on a show or trying to get into the game a bit, it'd just do silly things like deliberately go to the top of the cage or something like that and make sure you take your tag partner up around one of the others and try and, you know, slam people off the cage into the crowd and things like that, you know. So just try and do the craziest moves you can is what I used to do with it.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I would love to see a wrestling game where the objective is not to win the fight. The objective is to, you know, get the best reaction out of the crowd. That would be an interesting take on it.
Yeah, you want a kudos system or something like that, don't you? That kind of thing.
Yeah,
They have tried to kind of assess that, haven't they? Like, if you keep on throwing the same move, you know, you'll lose, like, maybe, because you'll always build up like a special bar, wouldn't you? Or it wouldn't build up as much if you just keep on throwing punches. So it's like you're not getting the crowd going.
Right, like a combo thing.
Yeah.
Combo. Yeah, I didn't realise that, no. I did try that Legends of WrestleMania, but that was rubbish, to be honest with you. It was good for, you know, sort of old time sake, like seeing people like the Ultimate Warrior and that, but the game itself was just poor, to be honest with you. Easy achievement points, though. Very easy achievement points.
There you go. Okay, thanks, Austin Moore. Just leaves me. Anyone who knows me will probably second guess what I'm going to pick, but my gaming highlight of 2000 was a game that I had the same level of anticipation for that as I do for Mass Effect 2, and that was Banjo-Tooie. I'm a huge Banjo-Kazooie fan. Like, the first game I've played all the way through, I don't know, must be more than 10 times now. I've done speed runs on it as well. Even when it came out on Xbox Live, I actually did the first two or three levels, and I was in the top 10, I think, in the leaderboard, because I've played it so many times that I could just speed run it. And Banjo-Tooie came out about 2 years later, and there was a huge build up to it because it was going to be twice as big and have lots more characters that you could play, quite a few different mechanics. And when I got it, it was everything I'd ever dreamed of. It still is one of my favourite games of all time, and I just love the bear and the bird. And that's probably about it.
Did they ever fix the... I can't remember if they ever did it on the N64, because you could trade things between the first cartridge and the second cartridge.
Yeah, the stuff and swap. No, they didn't, but they did on Xbox Live. So if you buy both games on Xbox Live, you get this secret egg, which is what you would have had with the stop and swap.
Yeah.
So you can do it now, but you've got to buy the two arcade games to do it. And I have done it, and it's quite cool. It unlocks an extra level, but...
I always wanted to know what it was.
Yeah. They experimented with it because it meant you yanking the cartridge out without turning the N64 off, and I think there were some issues around them doing that and possibly, you know, blowing up N64s, but that's why they never actually did it in the end. But yeah, it's a shame that, because it would have been a really cool feature. I mean, worth also pointing out that year, if you're a fan of the N64 and GoldenEye, that was the year Perfect Dark came out as well, and that was another game that I almost chose, but in my heart of hearts, I love the Bear and Bird.
That's a good one. They got they're bringing that to what's it called? Xbox Live soonish, aren't they?
Yeah, very shortly. Yeah, it's the same people that converted Banjo-Tooie as well. Austin Ball?
Oh, I was going to say the same thing, actually. Coming on. No, it's all right, mate. It's coming to XBL, you know. I'm looking forward to that, because I never actually played the N64 version. I've tried the 360 Perfect Dark Zero one, but never actually played the N64 one.
It's good. I believe it's going to have online, which is really good. And Perfect Dark, of course, have bots, so you can have, like, 16 players. So it's, it'd be interesting to see how it looks, actually, how it plays. Yes, the Xbox Live is becoming good for sort of classic first-person shooters now.
Yeah, that's something I'd like to see him do more of, to be honest with you. I've got a bit of a fetish for old school shooters, and you know, I don't mind not being able to look up and down and things like that. You know, quite happy to play the old game, so you know, more merrier on XBL, definitely.
Excellent. Right, let's get on with the main part of the show. We may have another guest join us later, and that's James Batchelor, who's a journalist and also a podcaster for on the Weeds podcast. If he does, then I'll just bring him in. But let's actually start talking about our feature game of the month. And as always, we will start by describing the box so that you can spot the game on the shelf or if you're perusing the games on demand list. So, Strident, would you like to tell us what the box looks like?
Yeah, working down the box then, at the top we've got Spooky Alien Eyes, Mass Effect in silver, some sort of shimmering energy, and then you've got this rather wet lettuce-like looking bloke standing in the middle. No guns or anything, just standing there. To his left there's a very stern looking alien, and to the right there is a girl in sexy armour. The two quotes on the front of the box are "genuine epic gaming" from FHM and "simply outstanding" from Games Master. Not really the two powerhouses in gaming media, but there you go. The BioWare is very prominent at the middle on the bottom as well. Doesn't look like a stunning action game, although there are lots of spaceships and stuff and aliens with guns in the background.
Okay, thank you. Austin Ball, would you like to just give us a quick synopsis of the game and its style?
Epic. Totally epic. It's I don't know the best way to describe it. It's a massive, galactic, sort of space opera RPG that you can play, you know, as quite an in-depth RPG or as a, you know, close to a straight shooter. Incredibly rich sort of universe, loads of aliens, loads of problems with aliens, and just a great RPG set in space.
Okay, thank you. And then, Ditz, did you have a point to make?
I just wanted to say about the cover. It's, you look at it and it just screams Star Wars. You know, you've got the characters all around you, you know, you've got the enemy looming in the background. It looks like the front cover to like New Hope or something.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing that, you know, they've made no bones about. They've borrowed from all their favourite sci-fis to create us Mass Effect. You know, they've taken the best bits, you know, music, visuals, art styles, and put it all together to give us this, you know, this experience, haven't they?
Right, now we do have some comments on the forum from people who couldn't make the show. So, Ditz, would you like to read out Grandmaster Fly's?
Ah, Fly's comments then, what we got? He's only briefly played it, even though he's got the second one, which he's just going to keep talking about it tomorrow, isn't he? But he says he's barely made it to his first planet, so he's not really played enough to give it like a fair judgment. But, and he's not really the biggest sort of RPG player, so he's sort of a newbie in that category. But he's saying his biggest problem with it, and something which Fallout and Fable handled better, was the kind of direction the game gave him. He says that this didn't really tell him where he needed to go. You know, it didn't really help him out enough. He says another big problem were like things like the upgrade parts or maybe level up the characters. He says it took him over 5 hours just to figure out that how to equip new weapons and then figure out that he could put upgrades into these things. So maybe it's part of the game. Maybe that doesn't explain enough for you. He's got a complaint about the combat as well. And he says he knows RPGs aren't supposed to be shooters, but in a game that forces you to fight so much, he just wishes it was easier to do. So he's saying he doesn't want to be all negative though, so he really enjoyed the world and the story, and he thought the conversation wheel was worked really well, but he didn't see a much of a huge difference when choosing stuff. Maybe that's just a bit too early on, but overall I think he enjoyed it, and he did enjoy it enough to pick up Mass Effect 2 on opening day. So
yeah, I was just asking whether the game had a tutorial, because I don't remember it having one.
Yeah, so yeah, it does, but it's kind of not very good. It just sort of says a couple of times push the right shoulder button to bring up the wheel. It doesn't really tell you what to do with it.
I remember a review at the time. I can't remember what website it was. It may have been one of the big ones, but I think somebody completed the game and says it was like one of the hardest experiences they've ever played, And then a couple of days later, they issued like a release, like a little press release, and said, sort of, sorry, we didn't actually figure out that we could level up our characters. I was like, what? What's this? He played through the whole game with like standard Shepard.
But didn't Fly almost do that? Isn't that what he...
I think that was Fallout 3, wasn't it?
Oh, I know what it was. It's one of the fellow pigeons, the Garth Spaceman, he was talking about it the other day, and he did that. He played almost half of it and with a pistol, and he didn't even realise he could level up or change his weapon.
Wow.
So, yeah, okay. I've got a comment from Silverfin, who left this late this evening. His thoughts were that he's basically broken it down. So the story was an enthralling universe, and it was well written. The gameplay is, if you're not familiar with RPGs, it can be quite confusing, but it really comes together on a second playthrough. The only downside he found was being locked into an ending that meant he wasn't able to complete some of the side quests that he wanted to do, and he would have liked the option to play on like you can in Oblivion. I think that's certainly fixed, isn't it, in the next one. The graphics he describes as janky, with excellent cutscenes but combat let down by poor frame rates. The sound he describes as excellent voice acting from the main cast. And the achievements, he says, were an afterthought and not particularly well balanced. I'm sure you'd agree with that, Strident. And he says, overall, it didn't really gel with the game on my first run through, but now being more savvy with RPGs, I loved it. 2 years on, it still stands a test, still stands up as one of the Xbox's top games.
Yeah, I've got to agree with his comments, to be honest with you. He's spot on with a lot of it. Definitely.
Okay, well, as you're talking, Austin Ball, would you like to just sort of tell us, for you, what were the strengths and weaknesses of Mass Effect?
I mean, the big thing for me was the story in the universe. I'm big on that when it comes to my games. You know, there are, you know, a handful of games that I will read all the novels, I'll follow the comics, I'll do, you know, everything I can to know as much as I can with the universe, and Mass Effect just absolutely provides on all levels when it comes to that. So, you know, that sci-fi universe just draws me in really, really quickly. I think that's one of the strongest things about it.
What about the weaknesses? What are the areas that they can improve?
Combat, definitely. I think on the casual and normal levels, it kind of gets a pass. But later on, you know, when you're playing on sort of hardcore and insane, the it gets quite tricky, the combat and the way it operates, and, you know, having to use that right bumper button to, you know, sort of stop time and use your things. But at the same time, even though I think the combat's weak, I think when you do crack it and you're working through it on some of the tougher levels where it takes like literally 3-4 minutes to, you know, to take down a, you know, like a Krogan Battlemaster or Warmaster, whatever the guys are called, it's really, really rewarding once you actually, you know, get through it.
Okay, Strident, would you like to, same question to you really, what were the main strengths and weaknesses for you?
Oh, well, definitely the story. I mean, the detail in the world, it was really fleshed out and well thought through. I mean, I imagine as a designer, you only get a few chances in your life to completely design a world from scratch, and I feel that the team behind Mass Effect really, really took that and went with it. The characters were interesting, well voiced, and usually well animated, although there were a few occasions where they were a bit ropey and they weren't really looking at each other while they were doing their movements. But I mean, the cutscenes were great, and it's so nice to see the cutscenes done in the in-game engine so that the people on screen were your characters and how you customise them. I hate it when they do a cutscene and you see a character in the default armour and it just completely spoils the immersion. And the other interesting thing, strength, I thought, was the moral choices, although I don't think there was enough payoff in the game. You know, you could make pretty big choices, but I don't think you saw the repercussions in this particular game. Weaknesses, I mean, I've got a big list, I won't go into all of them because I'm sure they'll come up. The loading is an issue. I'm sure that's an issue for loads of people. But what I think their problem was with things like the lifts is they wanted to create like these realistic spaces. So you go into a lift and the game would load as you travelled up to the next floor. But they, because they made them realistic, they, no matter whether the game was loaded in the background, it would still have you travelling up to the floor. The doors would open slowly, and then you'd slowly step out. And you know, the game has loaded in the background, you should just get to the point of it. But they wanted to say, look, there's like 2-3 stories between these two places, so it will take that long. But there's a few other things, but they'll probably come up with somebody else.
I just wanted to mention when you're saying about the cutscenes and things like that, there were parts of the game where, you know, you'd have your Krogan in a certain armour, but you know, then when you go back to the ship or something, he'd be sitting in his standard issue armour. So that it did have a few bits like that, and I think one or two of the cutscenes it did change armour in it sometimes. Went back to the default.
Oh, I think that was his off-duty attire, because I mean Shepard went into a civvy, so that's how a Krogan relaxes.
Yeah. Soup.
Krogan's in pyjamas.
His smoking jacket, you know.
Okay, thanks, Strident. Leg, same question to you, really. Strengths and weaknesses.
Right, well, the strengths are definitely, as with all BioWare games, the story, the detail that's gone into the making of the world. That codex that you get in the game is just ridiculously detailed, and you've shown they've put so much thought into it. Every action they do works in the universe they've created, and just the design of everything's just right. You can see that it's, you know, everything's right for that universe they've created, and they've put so much work into making it perfect. So yeah, strengths, definitely the story and the world, and the characters are actually people that you want to talk to, not just fatted stupid people that just hang along and well. So actually, leading onto a weakness is the AI of the companions in combat is a bit weak, because they just stand there and get shot. So when I tell them to go behind cover, they just stand there. They don't actually sit down, and quite a lot of the actual complaints that I've heard are actually eliminated in the PC version which I was playing. It's like the textures load properly, loading screens are quicker generally. So yeah, PC is definitely the best version for this game, I think, just because they've tightened everything up slightly.
Okay, thanks, Leg. Now, Major Lag, I've got a slightly different question for you, because I know that you do like to torture people in your games. So I really wanted to know, we covered quite a lot of the strengths and weaknesses, so again, please add to those as you like, but how did you find being douchebag, Shepard?
I've got to say, I enjoyed it. Shocking, I know. Mostly. It's one of the problems I found was that the douchebag options were kind of inconsistent. They were douchebaggy in different ways. There was, you know, you had your just impatient jerk Shepherd, you had your xenophobic Shepherd, you had your insubordinate Shepherd, all that sort of thing. So if you wanted to really sort of play a character as such, then just picking the renegade option all the time, you end up with this character who's a really confused mess. I don't know if anyone else found that, or if anyone else, you know, how many other people stuck with the renegade option all the time.
Yeah, I've got to say, it is still that, you know, it's the Paragon Renegade, and that's in the middle ground. There's no real, you know, trying to be extra nasty or, you know, really, really good. You know, I mean, it's still that, you know, you pick blue or red. You know, the wheel, however good it is, it's still fixed on good, bad, really.
Yeah. I mean, what I did was I'd already played as pure evil before. I've got a very, very evil character ready to go for the second one. But I found it really hard when I'm playing it without the intention of being evil to be too bad to people. You know what I mean? You know, it's just felt a little bit nasty. Plus, you know, a lot of the time you were busy trying to court aliens and the human woman as well, to try and get some sort of love scene going. So I didn't want to be too nasty to them all the time.
I wasn't a big fan of the conversation wheel, I have to say. I just felt it signposted too much for good and evil choices. So, you know, you always knew that the top right was a good and the bottom right was an evil. And, you know, and even in some sections it had them in like blue and red, just so you really knew. One of the things I really like about RPGs is reading the options carefully and saying, well, if I choose this, will they hate me? Or if I choose this, will this make everything go pear-shaped? And I just felt it was a little too signposted. But, I mean, the conversation wheel, because Shepard then spoke and acted out what you've actually chose, did allow it to have a more cinematic quality. So, you know, it did fit the game in that way.
I think it would have benefited if it hadn't been, as you say, so signposted. Like, up is good, down is bad, if things had been a bit more organic. So I think I stepped over Ditz there.
Nah, sorry, man. That's something I was just thinking, though. Dragon Age, they kind of addressed it in that, didn't they? And I've completely like not tried to look at anything for Mass Effect 2, but I hope they bring that system in, because it's not just, as Strident said, you know, top right is good, you know, bottom right is bad. So you have to actually read it, and, you know, maybe the bottom one will be the good choice, you know, or in the middle. So
just say about Dragon Age, that was evil. That every conversation I had, I spent like nearly five minutes just saying, is this right? Because if you do it wrong, it goes wrong very badly.
So what is it actually like in Dragon Age? What's the difference between that and, you know, Mass Effect sort of dialogue thing?
Well, you've got usually about five responses that you can do, and they sort of vary between evil and, you know, you've got very evil at the bottom, very good, and then sort of shades of grey. But right. They don't actually, well, it's not actually always the top one is the good one. Sometimes they mix it up. Right. You have to check. You can't just like press one all the time if you want the good answers, because sometimes they move them.
Right.
I mean, in Dragon Age, it's very easy to totally mess up a conversation. You can pick the wrong option, and then that person just will stop talking to you, and he won't give you any more quests, and he won't do anything. You know, it's just like, yep, yeah, you really insulted him. That's it. No more now.
Yeah, that's why I saved it before every conversation.
All right.
and before going through any door,
that's like sticking your finger in the page.
I was going to say, I mean, how much did you? Because obviously the save thing, you know, saving before conversations, that sort of thing, is something I did loads and loads in Mass Effect. Like most playthroughs, I'd end up with something between 300 and 400, you know, sort of saves, or that'd be the save number. I mean, did you guys do the same?
I didn't end up with quite that number. I think one of my ones on the third playthrough, I was somewhere in the upper 200s. So I saved quite a lot, but not all the time. It was more about combat than about the actual sort of quest choices and stuff like that.
Go on, Nick.
Oh yeah, I got about 70 in my 12 hours of play. Just because I learnt from Knights of the Republic, you save before every door just in case.
After that short break, I'd now like to welcome an extra member in the pod. We have James Batchelor, who's a writer for MCV and also formerly a podcaster with Weeds. Or are you still doing that occasionally?
formally, I'm afraid. I have semi-retired. It's guest spots like this that keep bringing me out of retirement.
Right, so yes, and you've got an infamous guest appearance on Sanctuary for Gamers as well, haven't you?
Yes, I have, which my better half does keep reminding me of.
Yeah, we were having a good chuckle about that earlier, actually. So.
I can imagine.
Okay, so as you're fresh in, let's throw you straight into the mix. So we're just talking about the strengths and weaknesses of Mass Effect, and we were talking about the discussion wheel and how it differs from Dragon Age and Mass Effect. And I believe, Major, you're the one who first raised this point. I think you had another point to make.
Well, yeah, I was sort of going to say I've got a few bits and pieces. I found it quite hard when I made my notes playing through. The weird thing is, I absolutely loved the game, but most of my notes were on flaws and weaknesses. So I wasn't quite sure how to reconcile that. But strengths-wise, I do partially agree with the guys that have spoken already about the setting, about the universe. I think those are strong. But I've heard at least Legg and Strident have both said that the story was good. I disagree. I think that the story, the main plot, was full of holes. You know, obviously, you know, spoilers free, or spoilers are free on the replay show. So I'm going to go into a little bit of a description of this. You know, you've got, so Saren is trying to get to the conduit. You're trying to stop him and all that sort of stuff. But the reason he's trying to get to the conduit, it turns out, is so that he can get into the Citadel. But then, at the start of the game, before he's even gone off looking for the conduit, he's a Spectre. Before he's encountered you, there's no suspicion. He's a Spectre in good stead. He can just walk into the Citadel.
Yep. I think, I know what you're saying, but I think there's a part in the story where they realise that he's a bad guy. So they wouldn't let him just straight back in, I think.
Well, yeah, but he's already searching for the conduit and the beacons and stuff at the start, before, you know, he shoots what's his face, Nihilus, and, you know, you start throwing your accusations against him. It's weird.
But my understanding was that he didn't fully understand what was going on. He was just a puppet of Sovereign, the Reaper. And so my understanding was that he was looking for the conduit because he thought it was a weapon. After, you know, all the way through the start of the game, you don't know what the conduit is until you find at the very end it's a back door to the Citadel. He's been searching for it because I took it because he thought it was a weapon, because he thought it was something they needed, something that the Reapers needed, rather than just waltzing into the Citadel and taking over. You know, element of surprise and all that. So I took it to be that, you know, he wasn't fully understanding. And you can see that, you know, when you confront him on Vermeier, you tell him you're just a puppet, you don't see what's going on, and he doesn't understand that Sovereign is controlling him and etc., you know, and things like that. So I just took it that he wasn't completely aware of what the conduit was.
I think you're right, because even right at the end, I mean, huge spoiler, but I suppose it's a bit late for that. I mean, at the end, you can actually talk him into shooting himself in the head when he realises how bad he's done.
I did that. Yeah. what I was going to think of the plot hole, I might have just missed this part by, but what was the point in Benezia? Did he use her to find the Reapers and the conduit, or...?
It's so they could have a next generation actor in it.
Yeah, that was good, having Maria Curtis in there. I was quite happy.
Wasn't she crucial to him? Wasn't she trying to control the Rachni? He was trying to use her powers to control the Rachni.
Yeah, to get them back. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the idea was Sovereign was trying to use Sauron to round up any species that they thought would help them. I think I seem to remember when I played it just for the show that there was some bit in the dialogue where I think it was on, you know, the I can't remember which planet it's on now. I think it's not Nevarious, it's the other one. The one with the giant tree thing.
Theros.
Yeah, where you speak to... Yeah. You have the conversation there, and she basically says that Saren was looking to round up allies for his cause. And I think that basically what they were doing is just rounding up all the sort of nasty, horrible species to then become the slaves of Sovereign.
I think he even said towards the end that he was trying to prove to the Reapers that some organics can be useful. And that's why he had the Geth on their side. He built up an army of Geth. He was going for the Rakan. He was going for the weird tree things. The Thay something? Thalen? I want to say Thrush, but that's not it. But, yeah, no, he said, we want to prove that, I can prove that organics are fine, so we don't have to be, exterminated this time round. So, deep down he thought he was doing the right thing. He was, of course, a Pillock, but he was trying.
Yeah, what I was going to say, I think how they sold it to us at the start as well, they were like, there's going to be DLC all the time, we're going to get all these different bits of story coming in. And I thought maybe that's what it was missing. Maybe there were these holes or these extra bits we could have played or seen that maybe should have been there and didn't happen.
I think actually at one point in the game it says, one of the characters say, well, why are these Reapers trying to break back into the universe? What do they want us all for? And somebody in the game basically says, who knows? The fact is they do, so just go with it, really. It's quite funny. I mean, the whole story... I'm talking about Dragon Age and Mass Effect. The whole story, I think, Mass Effect is quite like a sort of Babylon 5 story, which itself was based on, like, Lord of the Rings. And, Dragon Age is based on Lord of the Rings. If you actually compare Dragon Age and Mass Effect side by side, it's basically the same plot in both. You've got somebody recruited into a band of, like, a ranger-type character who's fighting this evil that's coming back to the world, and everybody else doesn't believe evil's coming back, and it's up to you to take it on and convince everybody and lead the fight. So it's basically the same story every time.
Yeah, so that's a fair point. I guess there's only so many ways you can design an RPG. Well, certainly only so many ways BioWare designs an RPG anyway. So that kind of brings us on to our the last two guests. So James, just going over to you, so what did you feel were the main strengths and weaknesses of Mass Effect?
Well, the main thing that struck me when I played it again this summer, over the summer, to get myself all set up for the sequel, reverse the decisions that I didn't like the first time around. And what I loved was the fact that it's aged really well, and it's still a really polished game. Now, you guys may disagree with that, but I absolutely... It's just brilliant. It's a really high-quality, polished game. If you go back and play, like, GTA 4, which came out after Mass Effect, and admittedly is trying to do something bigger, it's quite an ugly game now. It's quite clunky when you control it. Whereas Mass Effect, it was still quite smooth to control. The graphics are still absolutely amazing. For me, it's got this nice sheen to it. Not that kind of... Most games this generation seem to make everything shiny, which really winds me up. So things like, I swear, like Modern Warfare 2, on the night levels, your tough leather armor will start shining in the moonlight. It's like, no, it shouldn't really be shining. This wasn't that kind of shine. Everything looked clean and pristine and quite futuristic, metallic. It looked quite utopian. And it still looks really good. I mean, like, the graphics engine is really good. I still don't understand why they didn't use that engine for Dragon Age Origins, because Dragon Age Origins, by comparison, looks absolutely horrible when it gets to the cutscenes, because... Not the cutscenes, the conversations. Because, like Mass Effect, it uses the in-game graphics engine for the conversation bits, but because it doesn't look as good as Mass Effect, it doesn't look as good when it's in the conversations. And I loved how high a quality the game still is, 2 years on.
Go on, Leg.
Yeah, no. That's what I was going to say. It's much nicer than Mass Effect.
Is it on PC, though?
Maybe on your shitty consoles, but on PC.
Good man.
Dragon Age is beautiful.
I will have to say, with Dragon Age, the facial is terrible compared to facial animations.
So yeah, Strides has written plastic mannequins in the chat.
No, I just want to add, I haven't even played Dragon Age. I've only seen screenshots, and I still think Mass Effect looks better.
I just wanted to talk about the art style of the game. As James has brought it up on the strengths, the thing that really I absolutely love about the game is how it looks and how it feels. I'm a huge fan of I'm a big fan of 70s cinema actually, and I love sort of 70s conspiracy films and 70s conspiracy sci-fi, things like Saturn V and Capricorn 1 and things like that, and Silent Running, fantastic films of that period. And what I love about Mass Effect, which I know loads of people couldn't stand, is the film grain. I just think it makes it look authentic. You've got this, the aesthetic in the kind of 70s sci-fi was for beautiful clean lines, not the kind of Star Wars-y grimy universe, but more like the kind of Star Wars Imperial universe where everything's clean and crisp and futuristic, but then it's kind of hidden behind this sort of haze of something being wrong, something being out of place. And I think Mass Effect portrays that so well; it really does.
What I was going to say is that it cheats. It cheats with the film grain. You turn off the film grain, you turn off the motion blur, it's an ugly game. Yeah, I think the film grain enhances it so much. It really draws you in even more.
Absolutely. James, I mean, you made the point first. I mean, how do you feel about it?
Well, yeah, no, that's exactly this. I feel exactly the same. I turned off the film grain and the motion blur when I was playing, and it looks ugly. I wouldn't say that's cheating, though, because, you could argue that, to bring up a Nintendo fanboy example, the Legend of Zelda Wind Waker, it's cheating because it's just going for a simpler character model, a simpler art style, so it doesn't have to look as detailed. But it looked better for it. Likewise, Mass Effect, with that film grain. And it's only a small touch. It's only when you turn it off that you really notice it. It's such a small touch, but it really is. It makes the game. It makes the art style. It would be like watching Sin City in full colour. Without the film grain, it would just be completely different.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you. Because if you look at the story of the game, the story of the game is about, something's not quite right here. There's these massive Reaper things that are harvesting us every few million years. So the art style, it just reflects that and helps pull you into it. So I'm pleased they went for that as opposed to a shiny type futuristic setting.
You had a point, Major? Is he still with us? Are you there, Major? You're mute.
Sorry, I was on mute. I was going to do my old trick again, and I'm going to disagree. I didn't like the film grain effect. I didn't like the motion blur, and I turned them off. I tried turning them back on when I started it up again for these playthroughs for replay, and still just didn't quite, it didn't seem right to me. But I do know what you're saying about the sort of the 70s and so on sort of feel to it. And I think, and you probably got more to say on this than I have, but I think the soundtrack really sort of fed into that as well, that atmosphere with... It was very, very synth heavy, and so on, which kind of John Carpenter like, that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a mixture of sort of Vangelis, John Carpenter, and other bits and pieces from the early 80s. Yeah, it's superb.
I think the key thing is that the game tried to put a kind of Hollywood sheen on it and on the overall thing. On the overall product. And in some cases, if a game tries to look like a film, it doesn't work. It's pretending to be something it's not, and it generally suffers for it. And even if the game is brilliant, the way that it's presented, it kind of takes away from that. I think with Mass Effect, it's one of the rare cases where it's worked. If you look at the way, all the cutscenes are shot, with the close-ups on the characters during the conversations, the way that, it's angled, just over his shoulder as he's talking to someone, you know, the epic soundtrack that, you know, is well and truly, I was listening to it on the car on the way home, well and truly worthy of a full major triple, you know, triple A blockbuster sci-fi film. And because they've tried to make it quite filmic and it's not pretending to be anything else other than that, it's quite good. Dragon Age is, you know, by comparison, it's the next step from Neverwinter Nights. It knows it's a video game. All the cutscenes and the camera angles and that sort of thing are the sort of thing you would expect to see in a video game, and as such, you feel like it is a game, you treat it like a game. Mass Effect, because it's trying to be something more, trying to be a bit more movie-like, you almost give it the benefit of the doubt, let it do what it's trying to do, because it is doing it well.
Yeah, well, what I'd say with the camera angles, you know, how you'd... It was brilliant for the first half, I'd say, but then, because they reused it over and over again, it was, you know, I have to go now. You'd always have Shepard walking away, and it'd always be that same camera angle. Or you'd, it just didn't mix it up enough. It was really good and really cinematic at the start, but then it kept using the same trick.
It was a good trick, though, wasn't it? Yeah, worked.
It did.
I think, if anything, that's something that the conversations need work on, because the conversations... I mean, BioWare's amazing. They write so much lore, so much in, you know, backstory for the races, the locations, the characters. And it is all quite interesting when you're when you're going through it. You're not... If you don't have to read it... I mean, I remember, like, Neverwinter Nights, you used to have to read essays on each character. But if, you know, if they're telling it to you, you know, it's much more... it's much more accessible, it's much more easier to take in. But the fact that you're just staring at a face and then another face and then another face and then, you know, just back and forth between the two faces, it makes it quite stale, makes it quite boring. I kind of hope, like, in future BioWare RPGs, they kind of do, I don't know, perhaps like a flashback or, you know, kind of a little cutscene. So if, like, Tali, for example, is discussing the Quarian fleet, the convoy of ships that's just somewhere out there, if she's talking about that, I'd love if, like, the screen kind of faded over with perhaps, you know, like, just a quick vision of the fleet and gave us a glimpse into this universe, because they've spent so long developing this universe and we're basically lectured on it rather than, you know, shown it. It would be like, you know, it's like all those university lectures you used to go to where there were no slides, just a man at a podium talking. You can't really envisage what he's saying, but you know what he's saying has got some sort of merit. And if you just had that, you know, kind of visual aid, it would make it much more engaging. I think that's what the conversations needed.
Yeah, just go what you said about flashbacks. There is an actual planet, I think it's Elitania, the one with the little monkeys that are walking around, where one of them grabs something that you need to get. There's a part on that planet where you go to, I think it's one of the Asari pyramid things, and... You end up with, I think it's about 4 or 5 pages of text telling the story about how you have a flashback to being in the Stone Age and this sort of thing, but it's just purely text, unfortunately. You know, they didn't manage to flesh it out into an actual sort of cutscene or something like that. But so I think they had the ideas, but they just didn't put them in.
Okay. I don't even remember going to Elitania.
Yeah, yeah. It's the one with... It's quite a pretty one, quite green, and it's the one with little monkeys walking around.
It's the one that actually looks like a living world. All the others were just big rocks.
Yeah. Oh, yes, I do know now.
See, the thing was, like, was it, some of the side quests actually had a good storyline behind them, but they never really kind of developed it. So there was one on the Citadel where a guy is waiting, certainly the way, it depended on the background story you picked. For me... a guy is waiting outside the bar for Shepard, and he threatens Shepard, basically blackmails him, like, look, I know you used to be in one of the gangs on Earth, you know, and you used to do terrible things. You owe me for being silent. Do this for me. We're trying to find this man. And, you know, that would have been really interesting, you know, exploring that element of Shepard's past. You know, what did he do? What did he do that was so terrible? Likewise, another part of my backstory was I picked the... Survivor, so you know, I survived the attack on a planet I can't remember, but I think begins with A. And there was a side quest on a world where you find an outpost where scientists have been doing experiments, and it turns out the scientists were behind the creatures that attacked you in your backstory, and that, you know, was it the worm things that come out of the ground? I can't remember the name of them. the Thresher Moors, they had been experimenting on Thresher Moors. It was one of their experiments that had got out and killed your unit. And one of your men who had survived the unit had tracked down the scientist and was trying to kill them. And you can either talk him into it or talk him out of it or talk him into killing himself. And it was a really great storyline, but it was only like a 2-minute conversation. It'd be great, you know, if you had like a question like you find out one of your men has survived. So you have to track down any trace of him and go find him. And when you find him, you know, he's not there. You find out he's gone after the scientist. And when you find out the scientist... And progress like that rather than this, which was literally walk in, kill bad guys, talk to man, done. And again, flashbacks would have been good there as well, because you could have seen the original attack on your men that's in your backstory.
That one really annoyed me, because that was just like a major part of your character's, you know, life that shaped them. And it was like done so quickly, like you said, it was just a standard mission, just with a different ending to it. But I mean, there's loads of interesting missions on these secondary planets, but they're so spread out that you could easily go through and not play any of them. There was quite a decent one on a Geth incursion in one of the outlying areas, where you had like 4 missions gradually ramping up one after each other. That was, you know, quite a good combat mission. There was a great one with a Rachni swarm on one of the listening post missions, where you got attacked and you had to defend from the Rachni's waves coming in, but you just could miss them because they're in this empty universe, and after a while you just get fed up of trawling over these planets looking for something interesting to do.
Right, so I think we've covered majority of the strengths and weaknesses. I have to whisper, I actually quite like the Mako bits. I did. I just like driving the Mako.
That's on my list of weaknesses.
So what I'd like to do is just bring the this particular thread to a close, because we're rapidly running out of time. So Ditz, obviously we've missed yourself out. So do you want to just rattle through your strengths and weaknesses?
Yeah, strengths, I guess, because I love everything sci-fi, basically. And putting in Mass Effect, that first 5 minutes, the opening cutscene with the audio and just the visuals, what's going on, you know, it really sort of, it just tells you this is what you're in for, you know, and it's got no qualms about it. I am, you know, this is a deep sci-fi game, and it does that brilliantly. It sets the scene so well that you just know what's happening. Just the epic sense of it all. I mean, when I became a Spectre, I genuinely felt proud. You know, just how that was all delivered across to me is great. I think we've gone through loads and loads of strengths as well. But with my weaknesses, I'd say, yeah, the tech did let it down as well, but I can forgive it. We've known the Unreal Engine has had troubles since it's even been put on the 360. So hopefully with the second one, that will get fixed. But a big one with me was the side quests and things. We've sort of touched on it a little bit, but you'd go off to these planets, and I remember going on the Normandy for the first time and opening up this big galactic map and going, my God, where should I go? You know, and you'd fly over to these different places and you'd see like 10 planets in different solar systems. You're like, right, I'm going to go land there. You know, but you can't. You know, you maybe just survey it, or it's just a complete dead planet. And then you'd find one, you go down, and then there may be a quest there, but it's mainly this barren, empty place. And then the more and more you do, you then realise that each of these places, they all look the same as well. If you find a bunker on one planet which might be hot, it will be the same as the one which is the planet which is icy. You know?
Just like an MMO.
Yeah, it has to be said, like, I thought that the side quests... it kind of made the universe feel so empty. It was something of an anticlimax. You've gone from Eden Prime's, your tutorial world, you know, it's quite nice, quite well, you know, well designed. You go to the Citadel, which is phenomenal. It's absolutely amazing. All right, it's just a hub, but, you know, just seeing all these people and the idea of, you know, all these embassies and all these aliens and all these races and all the information you find out, and you think, wow, this universe is packed, it's brimming with life, this is going to be epic. You get your hands on the Normandy. Personally, one of my standalone moments is the making of the speech just before you leave dock, when you can truly kind of set the tone for your adventure in your own way. You know, it's your own monologue. It's such a silly little thing, but it was absolutely brilliant. It makes you feel like you're in command. It makes you feel like, yeah, this is it, here we go. And out you go, and you check out this map, And like you say, you know, there's nothing out there. I got really disappointed when you'd read, you'd survey planets. This planet is a post-industrial civilization that may be nearing space technology. And it's got a population of 49,000. You can't land on it. It's like, I want to go see what's there. And when you got like those little art blocks, like, you know, under all this text, it shows a beautiful city. You think, yes, I'm going to go there. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm going to go to this barren rock and do exactly the same as I'm going to do on all the other barren rocks. And, yeah, it just kind of felt like there was no effort made for the side quests. And it's a shame. When there were only, like, let's say, let's be generous and say four main quests after you get your Normandy, you get your hands on the Normandy, because you've got Neveria, Pharos, Ilos, Vermeer, four planets. Out of the universe of that many planets, you only really visit four. And you just think, why? What? There's no reason for this.
It was, and that's something I wanted to go back to, that maybe with the DLC. They did tell us there would be lots, didn't they? What did they give us? They gave us the Bringing Down the Sky and the stupid Pinnacle Station. I thought, you know, maybe they could have given us like the Anderson backstory, loads more.
And Bring Down the Sky was, you know, surprise, surprise, another rock.
Yeah. The maps, I know what you're saying, but at the same time, exploring space, exploring, you know, the universe, you know, the whole Milky Way, it shouldn't be something that's easy. It should take time. It should be something that's difficult, if you know what I mean. You should find lots of stuff that there's nothing there, you know, if you were to do it in real life, if you know what I mean. So maybe that's why they, you know, sort of chose to not be able to land on every planet.
Maybe, but the fact that there was only like one townstead, essentially. Okay, so there were settlements on Neveria and Pharos, but you know they weren't. You were only there because it was a mission critical. I wanted to discover things like trading posts and like, you know, and alien cities and stuff, because generally in an RPG, for me, to make it feel like a proper world, there should be like different towns, different villages. You know, if it's a fantasy one, you want different towns and villages. If it's sci-fi, you want different space bases and planets. And like I say, because the only place where you really had a townstead was the Citadel, and it was almost too much hassle going back there, given that you had a loading screen every time you travelled to a new system, and the only thing in the Citadel system was the system. So it took, I don't know, a good minute or two, and I know that doesn't sound long, but it takes a good minute or two just to nip back to the Citadel to like sell off some of the junk you've picked up on a random mission, or buy that new armor you'd been saving up for. It shouldn't feel that laborious. I see what you're saying, you know, it should feel like it's effort to travel across the stars, but equally it shouldn't feel like that much effort just to go home and sell something.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Someone's just written in the chat window, Elite with Planet Landings. I was gonna mention that in the Frontier. You could actually go to the planet and you could see the cities and the settlements. Okay, they were just vectors, weren't they? But even so, that had the sort of scale that possibly Mass Effect was aspiring to. But it's a shame. It's interesting when you read the books and the sort of fiction that surrounds the games written by the same guy, but there is a lot more out there that they sort of tease you with in the first Mass Effect, but you never get to see. And there's something that looks like they're addressing in the second game, because there's a lot in the first game. There was a lot of talk about the Terminus system. There was the whole business with the I can't remember his name now. It's the guy who's the sort of pulling all the strings in the Citadel behind the scenes.
Shadow Broker.
Now he's in the Terminus system. And they keep mentioning this, and they mention him, and it kind of teases you all along. So you're thinking, well, am I going to meet the Shadow Broker? Is there a quest that takes me to see the Shadow Broker? But it never actually gets revealed.
I just wanted to mention, I actually think, you know, story-wise, that the Shadow Broker is actually Sovereign.
Right.
Yeah, I think he's like one of the Reapers, I think is the idea. You didn't actually get to meet him in the game, did you? I don't think.
No, there was a couple of side quests that where you went and sort of shot some pirates who were working for the Shadow Broker, and there was that one where you had to do a quest for, I think there was two rival sort of criminal syndicates, and you went and took out one of them.
Mm.
And again, they were supposedly working for the Shadow Broker as well, but yeah, it's they do tease you with some of the fiction like that, and it is frustrating that you never actually see it through. Major?
Yeah, I was going to say, on the subject of sort of stuff that's been teased and not really seen through, something that it looks like they are going to see through, well, they're definitely going to see through in the second one, is another interesting bit of backstory that you could completely miss whatsoever, which is Cerberus. A lot of these little side missions, there's probably three or four of them at least, are related to this Cerberus organisation that's going to play quite a big part, from what I understand, in the sequel. And it's just, if you don't go digging around, if you don't find these side quests, then, you know, there are probably lots of people who've played Mass Effect who, you know, you say Cerberus to them, they say, who? What? Oh? But, James, you got a comment on Cerberus?
I was just going to agree with you, yeah, like, that you've got this rich world, we've got things like Cerberus, you've got the Shadow Broker, and things that we hope and slash we hear are coming up in Mass Effect 2, and yet they're never really developed in a way that you can remember them, because the side quests are so forgettable, because they're, I think the fact that the gameplay is so repetitive kind of doesn't, it means they all blur into one, so you don't remember what you've actually achieved. You don't remember, you know, unless there's a specific conversation, you don't remember which one's which. You guys say about the, you know, the Shadow Broker killing the pirates and the Cerberus missions. I know for a fact that on the second playthrough, I went through and I completed every single side quest, and admittedly I cheated and I did it with a Wikipedia list next to me. There's a good MassEffect.wikia.com has absolutely everything you need to know, and I had this list of side quests. Alright, okay, do this one, do this one, do this one, do this one, and because there's nothing really to say, right, you are now taking down the Cerberus network, you are now doing this, you know, you don't really register what you're doing. It's just, okay, go here, shoot, come back, go here, shoot, come back, and it means that the narrative that they've really taken the time to develop, and the seeds they've tried to sow before, you know, Mass Effect 2 comes out, haven't taken root in the way that they should have done.
No, and we only, I guess, you know, we hope that these are things that are addressed, and certainly from what I've read, they are, and they're sort of hinted at. If anyone's read the two books, a lot of this stuff is hinted at, and I was talking to Austin Ball the other day on Twitter about the third book, and it looks like the third book again follows the same fiction, and is sort of carrying on those sort of threads of story, if you like.
I really must try and track those down.
Yeah, they are good. I mean, I've read I'd say the second one's probably better. I've read them twice now. But anyway, that's Jones's points leads us on nicely, really, to kind of sum up on this particular game and this epic podcast. And really, it's just one question: is did you enjoy playing the game for the replay shows? Who haven't we heard from for a while? Leg, should we start with you?
Right, take myself off mute. That'll be a good idea. Yeah, I did. I enjoyed the game. I didn't necessarily enjoy being evil, though. I sort of was planning to play it through evil at some point, but I'd never get round to it. I didn't with Knights of the Republic as well, because I'm very bad at picking the evil choices in games. I sort of tend to do the good side, but yeah, it was good just playing through the game again, just to get used to it for Mass Effect 2.
Excellent. Strident.
Yeah, when I first played it, I was, you know, I'm a great big fan of Knights of the Old Republic, so I had so many high expectations, and I just wanted to be like that game. So when it wasn't like that game, I was a bit crushed and didn't enjoy it that much. But going back to it now, that's so distant in my memory. It's like a completely different game. I loved it this time. We've gone on so much about the weaknesses, but they didn't really bother me this time round. I played through it evil, and then I played through it good, and I could have gone on and played through it another fourth time if the sequel wasn't coming out this week. So, yeah, I really, really enjoyed it this time.
Excellent. Austin Ball.
I absolutely loved playing through it again. Really, really appreciated it. Because I had a lot of saves ready. But what I ended up going back and doing was I played it as evil, but I also did a second replay because I was looking at it and going, wow, all these things, I can't remember what I did with my other characters. So I played another run through from scratch on top of the evil one, just doing everything exactly the way I wanted it to be. And that's the first save that I'm going to take into Mass Effect 2. Plus I've got my evil one and my good one ready to go as well.
Excellent. Okay. Major, do you want to take it away next? Off mute.
That would help. Yes. Couple of little things to pick up first. I've once again got to disagree with something people are saying. Lots of people are saying playing it through on evil. You're not evil in it though. That's one of the things. You're just a jerk.
That's a very good
thing.
I was desperate to come in on that as well. I describe it as Dirty Harry. He's not evil. He's more like Dirty Harry in that he's good, but he just does things his way.
Yeah, absolutely. And that I think is one of the great things about it. I think that's why I've enjoyed playing it through on the replay. I've done more in terms of the renegade choices. Usually, almost always, I gravitate towards the good, you know, goody two shoes options in role playing games and so on. But with Mass Effect, you know, playing through as a douchebag Shepard is great because actually, a lot of the renegade choices make him more likable, I think, than the wimpy goody two shoes stuff. I thought that was great. Do you have a comment, Nick?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I mean, if you do play it as a total douche, at the end, I don't know if any of you managed got that ending, but at the end, you can let the council die, and then humanity actually, you know, sort of takes prominence and sort of takes over, you know, sort of lead in the Citadel. And you can choose, obviously, whether you want Udina or Anderson in there. But you can actually do that. And wouldn't you say that's pretty evil? You know, like letting them die and then taking their seats.
Yeah, he's got his reasons, though. Sorry.
Yeah. I actually did that with my good Shepherd. He was full Paragon. And I just thought it fitted better just to let them die because they didn't believe you, you know, all the way through. So it just felt right.
Yeah, like with the Rachni stuff, Strange just pop a little bit in the chat about this, but with this one, when I went through again on my non-douchebag sort of, you know, what I want to carry forward one, I actually, you know, gave the Rachni Queen her acid bath. You know, it gave me renegade points and so on, but it felt to me like, okay, this is the practical thing to do. I don't want to be, you know, going around in the sequel and suddenly I get swarmed by a bunch of Rachni. You know, safest thing to do.
I actually decided to let them live deliberately because I want them to be in the next game. Because I figured, well, if they're in the next game, they're either going to be fighting me, which is good because I get to shoot more of them, and more story, or they might even come back and be on our side at some point. So I decided to let her live.
Well, I guess we'll see on Friday on that one. It'd be interesting to see how some of those incidental decisions carry over to the next game. I know some of them do. Who's next? Ditz, do you want to tell us how you found playing it again for replay?
Yeah, just to say on some of them decisions, actually, from a couple of interviews I've heard with developers and things, is that some of the decisions won't actually be shown until the third game. So we've got a long wait on maybe some of them, so that's even better. But, I mean, if you've never played Mass Effect before, I mean, this is a brilliant game. It's one of the best on the 360, I'd say. Even though, coming from an RPG sort of standpoint, it's not really there's not much to do, I wouldn't say. It's not really overly involved how you can maybe take like your airship and go off and do lots of side quests and get really involved in them and then come back, because as we said, they're not really that great. But it's just the way it presents itself, I just loved playing it. I loved the whole characters, loved like just watching the story unfold, trying to do different things in the game. You owe it to yourself really to play this game, especially if you're in any type of sci-fi fan. But if you the thing with it as well, it's quite linear in a way, you know, for an RPG. I mean, someone said KOTOR before, you know, KOTOR was such a big game, you know, you really got into it. I probably preferred the story of KOTOR, but this one is quite linear, and I think if you're quite new to RPGs, I think it lets you in quite nicely as well. So I had loads of fun playing this, and especially with the second one coming up, I'm ready to go again.
Excellent. Okay, thanks Ditz. And James.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. Obvious response, we've all said that. For me, I loved it because, first of all, going in with like a level 30-something character makes it a hell of a lot easier. I don't know why, but I found it a lot tougher the first time round, and I am one of those wimpy gamers that if I keep dying at a boss, I'm not enjoying myself. I'm in these things for the story, particularly BioWare's games. I'm in it for the story. I'm in it to take part in events, to get from one end, you know, from the start to the end. I don't want to have to keep on, you know, fighting the same Geth Colossus thing over and over again. This time round, you wipe the floor with everything. So I really enjoyed the fact that it's much more accessible second time round. And I really enjoyed getting more into it this time round. Last time round, I kind of got bored. I got bored of side quests a little way through, because I thought I've got other things I need to be playing. I need to get this main stuff done, so I can just finish the story, and I want to find out how it ends. This time round, because I knew how it ends, I thought, right, I'm going to do absolutely everything. And when you do absolutely everything, you get a glimpse at how big and how wonderfully developed this universe is. I mean, I write in my spare time, and I love the idea of like backstories and histories and lore and everything, and I loved the way that this was written, this was developed. This isn't just a man saves universe storyline, it is man explores universe and happens to save it on the way.
Cool, that's a box quote if ever I heard one. Yeah, absolutely. Go on, Ditch, you had a point to quickly make.
Yeah, so say it does something like what the old games used to do, doesn't it? Because it doesn't give you all the pieces. Yeah, you can go and read about more, or you can fit things together in your head, and that's somehow that's better sometimes than when a game just lays it all its cards on the table at once.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think there's an element to the game of old school gameplay, if you know what I mean. Like just, you know, just that exploration, that, you know, all right, every planet's going to be the same, but, you know, I'm still going to grind through it sort of thing. You know, it just had a little bit of an old school feel to it to me, which was something that I really liked about it.
Excellent. Well, from my point of view, I really enjoyed playing it again. Playing it as a douchebag was interesting. I wouldn't say it would have been the way I would have played it originally, but I thought it was quite good that, like I said earlier, he wasn't really a douchebag. I know there's a couple of things, like when he massacres the whole town, when they're infected from that Thorian thing, but I said he's more like Dirty Harry. He's kind of, you know, nothing gets in his way, he doesn't like the establishment, in it for himself really, and I liked the fact that they did that they didn't go the kind of Knights of the Old Republic route and just make it light and dark. It was more like light and grey really. And in fact, I enjoyed replaying it so much at the beginning of the month, I was actually tempted to try and do it again this weekend. You know, that's probably just shows how much it was, you know, it pulls you in and doesn't let go, and it's got me really excited for Mass Effect 2 when it hopefully arrives this week. Did you get your email in the end, James, from Play? You did, didn't you?
I did. That was possibly the highlight of my day.
I've been checking the weather, and the plane is leaving Jersey okay, so we should. I think we'll be okay. Right, so I think we conclude our discussion there. I think, universally, we've all said we loved it, and I think we're all, despite its flaws, we're all looking forward to doing some more Mass Effect in the next few days. The replay debate, just very briefly, just go around the table. The replay debate this month is just really to quickly ask you, and I think actually, Austin Boy, you've already mentioned this, but will you be importing your Mass Effect character into Mass Effect 2? And if so, which one are you going to import, the Renegade or the Paragon? So start off with yourself, Nick, because I know you've already mentioned it.
Yeah, my plan. Well, I've got four saves. One Paragon, one Renegade, one that is the way I want to play it, and one that I've used for repeated playthroughs. And what I'm going to be doing, I'm actually going to be copying the save files onto another memory card so they're somewhere safe first, and only taking them over one at a time. And I'm going to go in with the one, you know, with the story the way I want it to go, the one I did at the, you know, the last run through first. Go on, sorry.
That's Renegade, or is that Paragon?
No, I actually played it twice for the replay. It's a mixture, really, of Renegade and Paragon. And then I'll go back as pure Renegade to see what we'll see what happens.
Okay, fair enough. Strident, which one are you using?
Well, I played through it twice as well for replay. I went through as a douchebag and got to about the mid-50s, and then I went through as an evil character and hit level 60. So I'm going to... No, I went through as a good character and hit level 60. That's the one I'm taking forwards. So I'll do my level 60 good character first, and then I'll either import the evil character or start a brand new game as a sort of an evil character, depending on what the options are for doing that.
Okay, Major, same question to you.
I like everyone else, it seems. I did multiple playthroughs. I did the douchebag. I did another one went about three quarters of the way through the game as an adept to unlock four more achievements, and then took the character I'd gone through as a douchebag with through again to get up from level 59 to 60. And like Austin Ball, I did the mix, the played it the way I wanted to. So I've now got a level 60 character that I can import, and I've got his character down. So, you know, he's very much respects the chain of command in terms of the Alliance military and so on. He's very disrespectful towards the Council. He'll do what it takes to get the job done, you know, if that means smacking someone about or threatening them. He's very protective of his crew and so on. So I've really kind of mixed and matched. You know, I was saying earlier, if you go entirely Renegade, you end up with this very schizophrenic seeming character. But I think taking the a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, you know, has just created this character that I want to go forward with.
Okay, thank you, Leg.
I was going to, I was going to play through again and do sort of like what I, you know, the story I wanted to do and try to do as many of the side quests as I could find, but I got sucked back into Dragon Age, which I thought I was about two thirds of the way through, but I wasn't. I was about half the way through, so it took a bit longer than I thought. So I'm not going to have time now. But I'll probably go back and do it again when there's not any other games coming out.
Okay, fair enough. James, which character are you going to take over?
Well, I only really have one to take through. I mean, I played through first time, and I was quite happy with the storyline I got. I worry that I kind of got the default Paragon storyline, if you will. I mean, there are so many choices, so many endings, that I don't think there can be a default one. But for me, it kind of felt like the typical cliched story. So, he was good. I went for a kind of... He started off as a kind of tragic hero, Jack Bauer style character at the start, when he's lost so many men in the past that he doesn't want to lose any more. But then towards the end, he kind of became like a Star Trek Federation captain sort of bloke. You know, he's there for understanding. He wants to see the universe unite, etc. So by the end, I'd just done the Save the Council, Captain Anderson as ambassador. So I've only got that one. When I went through for the second playthrough, the only reason I went back was to save Rex and to do all the other side quests. The only reason I went back was to save Rex, because the first time around, I hadn't had Rex in my party. And I'd really liked the character when I had had him in my party, but I hadn't had him in my party as much. So I kind of wanted him around for the sequel. So I've only got one character to try. The other ones, going through as a douchebag, I kind of want to go through, but it would just be out of curiosity. I'm quite happy with the decisions I made. I'd only be doing the other ones just to see what how it changes Mass Effect 2.
Yeah, because I think if you really feel you've defined your character, then in some ways it's probably a good thing not to go through as a douchebag, because it might polarize, you know, it might change your views about some of the actions you've done. So yeah, something I felt doing it a second time. Dits, mate, yourself, you've got a couple of characters.
I have. I'm taking my Lady Shepherd through. She is a good girl. She likes the blue ladies as well. So I thought
just
that was
like mine.
Had to happen, really. And I've taken her through. She's done some good things and some bad things. I did let the council die, but it's kind of like how I want the story to pan out. I've mainly played it as how I want the story to be. I didn't play as a douchebag. I think I said about this, and you were like, well, how come you're not? It's for some reason in games, I don't like playing the bad guy. I don't know what it is, and I know you're saying it's not the bad thing, but that's it. Who's got a comment?
Just wanted to ask, did you get the, you know, the sort of romantic options when you play through as a female?
Yeah, you do. You bed the blue girl. Yeah.
What girl on
Lady loving?
Girl?
Oh yeah.
Oh right. Yeah. Right. What about the guys? Do you get anything? You
know, Caden.
Really?
I let him die straight away.
I did as well. I killed him off, bastard.
Oh yeah. Get rid of him.
He ain't touching me. I'm basically Ditz, exactly the same as you. I've got two characters. My male one is the douchebag, although, like I said, he's not really a douchebag, and my female shepherd's the original, who was very much kind of Captain Janeway type of character, really. So, and she's the one I'll take through to the next game. Actually, having played in both, I actually think the female actress, the voice actress, is actually the better of the two. Some of her lines, some of her dialogue's different, and I just think she just seems to carry more gravitas in some of the really important scenes. Jennifer Hale was strong, just pointed out. I thought she was better.
I don't know why. I only played with the male shepherd, but I've seen videos with the female. I prefer the male one, partly because, like, when I play these sort of games, I play... I know it's not narcissistic or egotistical at all. I play as myself. That's the avenue of escapism I like. I like to see what I would do in that situation. But in the case of Shepherd, I don't know why, but the male one, perhaps because I made him blonde, reminded me like of Captain Blue or one of those sort of characters from Captain Scarlet and the Mysterons. And there was just that kind of hint of nostalgia that I think it was just kind of the clean... accent, the clean voice. You know, there's no hint of a regional accent at all. It's just a standard American accent, standard military, you know, voice. So it just kind of made me feel like it was a bit Gerry Anderson-esque.
He sounds
quite liked.
He sounds a bit like the lead actor from UFO. You know, Gerry Anderson's live action.
Yes, he does.
He does sound like that. Yeah. Right then. Okay, so that's Mass Effect done, I think. So let's move on to the conclusion of the show. If you're not familiar with the format of the show, it's what we do at the end is we ask our guests to nominate a game for next month's replay, so February's replay. The rules are, because the Wii and the PS3 have now caught up, the rules are very simple. The game must be at least 2 years old, and it must be playable on current hardware. So you can't pick Dreamcast games, unfortunately, unless there's a Dreamcast port on current hardware, like, for example, Soul Calibur. Right, so who should we start with? Ryden, you've probably had a good think about this, so what's your game going to be, and why? Sell it to everyone.
My game is going to be Overlord, which was released in June 2007.
Good
on
choice.
360 and the PC, and there was a version later. It's a game that had a sequel last year, but I didn't like the sequel. The original game for gremlin-like minions, and you basically play a bad guy, and you have to take over the world and defeat loads of heroes. It's a good satirical sort of a parody of all the sort of Lord of the Rings style games. It's very, very funny, something that the sequel wasn't. There's some great character designs, and it has a lot of flaws, but the sequel didn't really fix any of them, so I would much rather play the original game, and it's one I think lots of people missed out on at the time, so it's quite a good game for replay.
Okay, thank you, Striden. Now, I believe that's PS3, 360 and PC, maybe?
Yeah, the 360 and the PC version definitely came out at the time, and then the PS3 version, which was a slightly expanded version, Overlord Raising Hell, came out a bit later.
Okay. Right, who should we go with next? Leg, have you got your nomination and your reasons for it?
yeah, this I don't. I've got still trying to decide between two. I'll pick the Simpsons game, mainly because I thought it was actually quite a good game, and I want to go back and try it again. I know it had quite a lot of problems with the camera angle. I remember being quite bad, but I remember it being overall a very good game. Yeah, that's why I picked it.
Okay, and I think that's on lots of formats.
I think
DS as well, I think. So I know that because I've got it. Okay, thanks, Leg. Austin Ball, would you like to give us your nomination?
Yeah, I've got a list of about four or five in front of me, and I'm still making my mind up there.
You've got to pick one.
Yeah, I can only pick one.
Lick your finger and stick it down.
I'm going to go with Rainbow Six Vegas.
Oh, you bastard.
Were you going to go for that?
Not now.
Well, I'll change my mind if you want to stick with it.
I'm going to
go with Dead Rising then.
Okay.
Dead Rising. I did play it initially. I didn't have a HD TV at the time, so I struggled with the menus. I didn't really give the game the time that it deserved because I tried to play it over the Christmas holidays while I was staying around my mum and dad's. A couple of years back, but I just didn't really get into it. So I would love the opportunity to go back because it's got a lot of fun in it, lots of features, lots of talking points, lots of comedy. You get to kill zombies with lawnmowers, for God's sake. I mean, why wouldn't you want to do that? And the second one's obviously due soon, so I think it'd be a timely game to add to the replay.
Okay, thank you, Austin Moore. And just to clarify, so my nomination will be Rainbow Six Vegas.
Sorry.
No worries. Ditz, have you got your one?
I have, and I don't know if anyone's going to even vote for this, but I'm going to go for Viva Piñata.
You are a star.
I loved this game. I don't know if anyone would admit it, that they played it, but I bought this on release. I think the colours, the vibrance of the world, it's actually one of the most deepest sandbox games you're actually going to play, trying to romance these little things to get the next one, to get like the lion and all this. You will waste hours and hours. I think I made it to like level 60, I think it was, in that. I must have put in like maybe 50, 60 hours into this game. I loved it, just the graphic quality, everything about it, and just you could lose yourself in it for days. It's kind of a mix of like Animal Crossing and Harvest Moon, if you want to kind of pigeonhole it, but absolutely great game, which I think everybody should play.
Thank you, Ditz. I've got the soundtrack to Viva Piñata. I love it. I'm going to be torn now. James, have you got a nomination for?
I'm going to go with Splinter Cell Double Agent. The new one's coming out in April. It was meant to be coming out next month in February. I am really excited about this game. I'm a massive Splinter Cell fan. And, the new one coming out, Conviction, is meant to kind of revitalise the series, fix everything that you used to get wrong. Because, as popular as those games were, and they were, they reviewed really well, they sold quite well, there were a lot of things that, people used to complain about, that people, used to hate them. So I think it'd be interesting to sit down and discuss what needs to be fixed before Conviction arrives. It would also be interesting because there were two versions of the game actually built. There was one which was Wii and PS2, one which was Wii, 360 and PS3. 360, PS3 and PC. And they were completely different games, had completely different missions. And it'd be interesting to see how well those have aged. And along the lines of Mass Effect, what storylines you kind of followed, because it did have a kind of two storyline structure, whether you were closer to terrorist or closer to good agent, how much he betrayed the America, etc. I just think it'd be an interesting one to go back on, see how people play through it, and see what they expect from Conviction when it arrives.
Excellent, thank you. Major, you're next.
Yeah, I have to make a confession here. My choice I'm going with on purely selfish achievement whore grounds. I was torn between a couple that are sat on my shelf that I want to try and wring a few last achievements out of. And one of them was Burnout Paradise, which was up for voting last month and didn't get picked, so that's obviously out of the running this month. So the other one, which I'm going to go for, is Modern Warfare, the original Call of Duty 4. I don't think I really have to say much about it. I think everyone pretty much knows what it is. Obviously, we don't have sort of an upcoming sequel like with Splinter Cell to prepare for. I think it could potentially be interesting to go back and look at it again in the wake of the sequel and see, how it holds up and do a bit of comparison there. But if I'm being completely honest, that's not my reason for choosing it. It's purely selfish achievement whoredom.
Fair enough. Okay. Just to, I suppose, make the pitch with Austin War for Rainbow Six Vegas. Reasons that I think it's worth exploring again is that I actually still think it's probably the best first-person shooter on the current generation of consoles. And I think the combination of the kind of snappy cover system and the sort of really solid, satisfying feel to the weapons just make it feel like a really good, visceral game. You really feel it when you're playing it. It feels good playing that game, and it doesn't feel unrealistic like Whisper's crappy Modern Warfare, and also you're a copper, and you're not some bloody jock. I mean, that's the thing I can't stand with these modern kind of military shooters, is that you half the time you're either an SAS guy or you're a moronic flathead who's just shooting people for the sake of it. But at least in these games, you're actually a copper. I mean the American jock rather than the Scottish jock. Right, so that's the games. I'll just run through them again. So we've got the orange box, which carries over from last month. We have Modern Warfare, Rainbow Six Vegas, Splinter Cell Double Agent, Viva Pinata, Overlord, Dead Rising, and The Simpsons. So there's a big list there. The poll will go up probably tonight. And as there's a big list, it will be a case of voting for probably your favourite two from that list, so that we get an overall winner. Otherwise, we might end up with four games all getting six votes each or something dreadful. We'll have to rig it. Right, so that just leads us on to the end, really. And just to remind people that if you want to take part, then do check both the poll and the blog at www.thegamerscene.com to find out which game we'll be playing in February. So just click on the forum and you'll normally find the thread under the podcast board on the forum. If you don't have these games, some of them are available on Games on Demand if you're feeling rich, but you can pretty much pick them up from most. Well, looking at the list, you shouldn't have too much trouble picking up these games if you don't already have them. Modern Warfare may be the only one that's a bit tricky, getting it cheap. But good places to try are obviously eBay, your local game or game station store, play.com trade, amazon.co.uk used, and also Love Film are often good places to pick up second-hand games. Look out, if we pick a multiplayer game, then do look out for organised The Gamer Scene game nights. Certainly 1, 2, 3, I mean, we've got here three of the games support multiplayer at least. So we've got three, certainly Splinter Cell, Modern Warfare, and Rainbow Six Vegas do. If those win, then there'll be organised game nights, which again you can find on the forum. If you would like to take part or to leave comments on the February game or to give us suggestions or feedback, then do please email us at feedback@thegamerscene.com and use the subject replay. Or you can use Twitter. So again, you can find us at twitter.com/thegamerscene. Or you can contact either myself or Ditz, as we tend to organise the show. Again, twitter.com/Xantiriad or twitter.com/Ditz, and just let us know. We do obviously rely on people to come on the show and take part, and we'd love to have you on the next podcast, but if you can't do that, then the next best thing is just to leave us a post on the forum, or again, send us an email or a message just telling us what you thought of the game, and we can read it out on the show. Just to give you a summary really of the upcoming replay shows, some of you may have listened in to our special shows that we have sort of once every 3 months. So next month we've got another regular replay show, obviously with the game that we vote for this month. In March we're going to have another retro special. You may have heard our previous shows. If you haven't, you can find them on iTunes, but we had an 8-bit special and we had a 16-bit special. And now we're moving on to, I suppose, what will be the 32-bit era. But that's the era of the PlayStation 1, the Saturn, and the N64. And we're going to be recording that show in early March. So again, if you want to take part, you want to have any suggestions for that show, for any games that you'd like to feature in that show, then again, check out the forum at www.thegamerscene.com. And then finally, at the end of March, we'll have another regular replay show. So I'm now just going to run through the pod here and give everyone the opportunity to really plug their sites or podcasts or whatever else that they do. So let's start off with Austin Board. Do you have any plugs or shout-outs that you'd like to make?
First of all, I'd like to say thank you to you. Thanks for having me on. Great show. Really enjoyed it. So thank you very much to you, mate. Secondly, to everyone who's on the show. Done a cracking job. Thanks. And thirdly, to the wider community, really, everyone across the UGN, all, sort of associated communities to us, like S4G, Digi Cowboys, everyone else that we sort of, talk to every day and sort of hang out with every day and play games with. Just wanted to give a big shout out and just to let people know that, do feel more than, we'd love to see you coming on the show and getting involved as well. So if you feel like that way, please do.
Thank you. Thanks, Austin Boyle, for those very kind words, and also to, again, encourage people to come and take part, because that's what we need. It'd be great if we had a big pod like this every time, although I won't be saying that after I've edited it. Major, would you like to give any plugs or shout-outs?
I'll start with the plugs. First of all, do not forget about Major's Modern Warfare Mondays. Every Monday we get together and play some Modern Warfare 2. That's usually starting about 9 p.m. a few minutes after, if I'm delayed doing whatever, but so that's every Monday. Come along, help us keep at bay the hordes from Frugal Gaming, those deniers, those well, what can I say? Sweet, sweet, sweet victory. What else? You can find me on Twitter, just at MajorLagUK, all one word. And shout-outs wise, just thanks to yourselves and to Ditz, to Fly for keeping all the Gamer Scene stuff going, to everyone else who helps out around the site and on the forums, all that sort of stuff. And a quick special shout out to Shoinen from the Big Red Potion show, also on UGN. I know him and his missus got a little bit of a health thing going on and all that, but just a shout out, a get well soon in that direction.
thanks very much, Major. Obviously, we all echo those thoughts. Leg, would you like to give your any shout outs or plugs you've got?
Yeah, I've got two plugs. Firstly, for the Ninja Fat Pigeons, I've got a new podcast, thanks to Zan, with new title, new picture, and new series. I'll just put the picture in because I helped there.
You did indeed, yeah.
And I'll plug my game night for the TGS and or UGN. It's the Friday Night Zombie Fun every Friday at 9 PM on Left 4 Dead 2. Is always fun, especially hearing Fly giggling in the background when he tongues you.
Thanks, Leg. James, have you got any?
Yeah, I'd like to thank you all you guys for letting me on. I'm sorry I was such a late entry, fashionably late, hopefully, possibly. But it's been really good. Thank you so much for letting me join in with you guys, because I really enjoyed playing Mass Effect again. I'm really psyched for Mass Effect 2, so I was glad to have people to discuss it with. Shout out wise, I may not be with them anymore, but I would like to shout out the Weeds podcast. I ask if any of their listeners are listening to this now, or if you go over there and you're wondering why there aren't many podcasts at the moment, there are a few transitions going on behind the scenes. They've had a difficult couple of months, but you can find them at www.weeds-podcast.com. Weeds is WeeDS, one word. We're so clever. I don't know who came up with that, but yeah. Weeds-podcast.com. It's funny, apparently. And for myself, I'd like to shout out my blog because I have started writing it again, which helps. My blog is Games Journalism or Bust, and it's found at gjob.co.uk. So that's gjob.co.uk.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much, James. Yeah, and I'd like to second the plug for the Weeds podcast. It's, without that, I wouldn't be able to enjoy a lot of the WiiWare and DSiWare games that I have. And they do a grand job with that. And particularly Chrono Genesis and Nintendan do a fantastic job in covering that stuff. Who's next? Strident.
Just join into the general well wishes to Sin and his family. Hope everything works out okay there. And just another request for everyone listening to get onto the forums at thegamerscene.com. Come and join in the conversation, come and have a chat, get involved in the replay, and just show your face and say hello. We won't bite. It's a very friendly community. I know every podcast says that, but it really is a friendly community. So log onto the forums, make a username, and just say hi.
Yeah, just to echo really what everyone said, massive thank you to all of you for coming on the show right now. I mean, the replay wouldn't happen without the listeners, without people who come on, you know, to give us their opinions on the game as well. So you guys help make the show, so thank you for that. Thank you to all the communities across the UGN and our own forums. Guess just to remind everyone, we do have our weekly show as well, where it comes out every Thursday, so it'll be coming out tomorrow. And yeah, just to listen to every show in the UGN as well. And I do want to be, I wouldn't mind some emails in as well if anyone's interested. I've done a few video reviews over the past few months, but need some more people basically. So if there's a game you've recently gone through and you really enjoyed, or a game you didn't like, if you just want, it'll be a 10-20 minute interview, just email and I'll chat to you about the game. Ask me about I'll ask you all things about it, put it to video, we'll put it up on the feed, and you know, away we go.
Frugal Game and Scrooge Cast,
thegamerscene.com,
Ninja Fat Pigeon,
Gamer.uk,
Big Red Potion.
Welcome to the UGN.
You don't need to go anywhere else, we have it all here. Buy your games through Frugal Gaming and save a significant amount of cash. Then get down to the communities and play online with friendly and respectful gamers, such as those at the Ninja Fat Pigeons. To find out more about your games, you can check out Gamerdog and the Gamer Scene, where news and discussion will keep you well informed. And for those who like to dig deep, there's Big Red Potion, where you can get some serious and in-depth analysis of the games that you love.
So all it leaves me to do really is to say again, thank you for listening. do remember to vote, play and join in, and I just hope you will join us again in February.
Ever since we beat them on Monday, Daz has just been like, he's ignoring my messages, he's ignoring my calls. You know, we tried to get him in on that thing we called last night, and I think he's a bit sore. So I just want to say, Daz, come on, man. You know, if you come back, you know, we won't, you know, beat you as hard as we did. You know, so, you know, please do come play with us, mate.